We come at last to this last Sunday of the Christmas season. Yesterday was the Epiphany, the celebration of the 12th day after Christmas when we celebrate the coming of the Magi. For the last month, we have talked about how we come to this story of the birth of Jesus. How do we approach this story every year, every Christmas season as it comes around again? As we hear it once again, how do we approach it with the characters that we are introduced to? We started with the angel Gabriel announcing to Mary the good news. We've looked at the angels, the heralds of God's good news. We talked of Mary and Joseph, who answered the call that God placed on their hearts, even when it was difficult, even when it was a struggle. The made-up innkeeper, who somehow found room for Jesus to come into the world. And last week, we witnessed the birth of Jesus as the shepherds, who were called to be those first witnesses, called to go out into the world and tell the world about God's sacrifice, to go and tell it on the mountain. This week, finally, we come to this story as Magi. The Magi were readers of the stars, astrologers, consultants to kings, purveyors of strange and mystical arts who interpreted the heavens and their influence on the world. One night, far away to the east in distant lands, as they looked at the starry night sky, they saw something was different. Something was not the same as it had always been. Something had changed. There was a new star, a bright star in the sky. They determined this star was a sign of a newborn king. They left to pay homage. The journey was long. It took them time to get there. They did not come upon the same scene that the shepherds had witnessed just a week ago. The newborn in the manger wrapped in swaddling clothes. More than likely, by the time the Magi arrived, Jesus was anywhere from 6 months to 18 months years old. 6 months to 18 months old. There's no years in there. You can tell how long it's been since I've talked about my kid in those terms. My kid's officially 243. By the time they arrived, Jesus was a toddler, was a child. We know this for a lot of reasons when we look back at the birth customs of that time, the purification obligations of Mary, the fact that Jesus was presented in the temple at 40 days, the fact that Herod knew he had to kill all children under the age of 2 if he was going to find this king. Through Herod's scribes, we find out that the king was supposed to be born in Bethlehem. That's what they tell the Magi. But we don't actually hear where they find Jesus in the story. What Scripture tells us is that there, ahead of them, went the star they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. So even though Herod's scribes had suggested it was Bethlehem, we don't know that the wise men didn't just follow the star to wherever it took them. Perhaps Bethlehem, perhaps Nazareth. They come and they offer their three gifts. We sing songs like "We Three Kings," and we have this image. We've put away the Christmas decorations, but we had our three kings out. But we don't know that there were three of them. More than likely, customs at the time, there were probably 10 or 12 traveling together. But they brought three gifts. They come and they offer those gifts. They come to see this thing that has happened. They come to worship a king whose birth has altered the heavens itself. The Magi came because they noticed something different in the sky. They noticed something was different, something was new, something was changed. They were drawn to the light that signified God had come into the world. Ours is a cynical world. We expect death and danger and dire straits in this world. Our evening news is a constant cacophony of violence and fear and turmoil. We eye each other with suspicion and distrust. We expect the worst so that when we get it, we aren't disappointed. We hesitate to respond to needs, afraid that we might be taken advantage of by an uncaring, unsympathetic masses. And in that dark echo chamber, we forget what the light of the world looks like, what the light of the world feels like, what the light of the world sounds like. We become so inundated with the chaos and the confusion, which sometimes feel like our only companions on this journey, that we lose sight of light and love. So much so that when just a little light is shown in the darkness, it surprises us. It inspires us. It lifts us up. Just a little light shown in the darkness will push the darkness back. That is our call, to shine our light, to be different than this world, so that when people see that difference, they notice. They're curious. They want to see more of it. That was the Magi. They saw something that was different. In the darkness, a new light was shining, and they followed it for weeks, for months, to see what it was. Our call is to shine the light of Christ into the darkness of this world so others will see it and follow it. Last week, I told you that we come as the shepherds, the first witnesses, so we can go and tell it on the mountain. Jesus Christ is born. And you sat here and you listened and you said, yeah, we're the shepherds. Yeah, we're supposed to go tell the story. Go tell it on the mountain. Yeah. How do we do that? By being different than the world around us. By shining our light in dark places. By being kind and caring and generous and gracious and humble and just. When you exhibit these things, you are shining the light of Christ into the world, and people will notice. Last Sunday night, we gathered at my mother-in-law's house. That's when she celebrates her Christmas, is on New Year's Eve. So we were getting together at her house with the whole family, and we did the whole opening the presents and the stockings and all the food and all that. And it got to be a little bit later. It was about 10:15, and my wife and I were headed home. We live about 2 miles away, and my daughter was driving her car in front of us, and she called me, and she said, "Dad, there's a dog wandering around in the street up here. What should we do?" Now, it's about 10:30 at night, and it's about 3 degrees below zero. And finding this dog's home is not what was on my agenda for the rest of the evening on New Year's Eve. So we pull over, and I get out to check this dog out, and she's a sweet old chocolate lab. She comes up to me, and she lets me pet her, and she sits down next to me. And I look around trying to see if there's anywhere she could have come from. There's only one house on the block that's still lit up. I assume they're celebrating New Year's Eve. So we take the dog up to their door. We knock on the door at 10:30 at night. They come. Unfortunately, it wasn't their dog. They didn't recognize the dog. They didn't know who it belonged to. So I'm looking around at this dark block of houses thinking, I can't just knock on people's houses when they're asleep. And I don't know what we're going to do with this dog. And my daughter's looking at me with those baleful eyes. And I'm like, so I helped the dog up into our back seat, and we took her home that night. We put a blanket on our bedroom floor, and she laid right down on it. She was obviously very, very cared for, very loved by somebody. We have three dogs myself, three small Yorkies. They're about 5 pounds each. This lab was a good 80 pounds, and to her credit, she had the sweetest disposition. My dogs lost their mind. Right? They had no idea why I was bringing a horse into the house, but they were not good with it. She didn't bark at them. She didn't growl at them. She did have this quizzical look, which I can only figure was her trying to figure out why we let squirrels in the house. She spent the night with us, slept on the floor. The next morning, we went back to my mother-in-law's for breakfast, and I walk in now with this 80-pound lab, and everybody's like, oh, my gosh, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. She's a sweetheart. I've got to find her. I don't know how to find her owner. And my wife is every 5 minutes reminding me we can't keep her in my ear. So we got on Facebook. We got on social media. There's several Facebook pages for lost pets in Kansas City. My daughter and her boyfriend started texting their friends, asking them if they could look on some of those pages for us. They were familiar with. We're looking. And about 20 minutes in, one of Abby's friends texts us a picture and says, hey, this just got posted 45 minutes ago. Guy's looking for a chocolate lab. And it was her. Her name was Harley, we discovered. So it turns out the guy only lived about 5 blocks from my mother-in-law. So we took Harley down to him. He was so ecstatic to see her. He was disabled. He had let her out the night before to go to the bathroom, and his neighbors set off fireworks for New Year's Eve, and she took off, and he couldn't chase her. He wasn't physically able to go after her down the block. So he had pretty much resigned himself to the fact that he was never going to see his dog again. And she was not a young pup. She was a good 15 or 16 years old. She had the white coloring around her muzzle and around her eyes. And she was so happy when she saw him. She went bounding up to him, and he was just overjoyed. When I got back to my mother-in-law's house, I thought, you know, I need to let people know we found his owner, because we had put a message out on several of those pages, hey, we got a found dog. So I got on and I posted a picture of Harley, and I told the story. Hey, we found her owner. I told what had happened, and I put it both on my own Facebook page and then on the Lost Pets page. Over the last 6 days, over 550 people have responded to those posts. Over 550 people have reached out and either commented or liked it. Excuse me. Over 550 people have commented on it, have shared it, have liked it. Such a simple thing. When you really look at what I did, I took a sweet, friendly dog and let her sleep on an old blanket on the floor. That's all it was. And yet that small act of kindness, 550 people noticed that and said, hey, look at that. That's something. Gary and Linda Ruffin are two of our members. They go to our early service. Every year, Gary works on bicycles. He'll buy up bicycles at swap meets, at junkyards, and he pretty much cannibalizes them, puts them, and tries to make good bikes out of the pieces he has. Just last month, he and I were delivering a washer and dryer that had been donated to a house just down the street here. And as we're going in their back door, they have a pile of old rusty bikes in the backyard, and Gary's watching it as we go in. And I was like, the washer first, then we'll talk about the bikes. And he puts these bikes together, and then around Christmas time, he contacts an elementary school and says, hey, I have bikes for all different ages of kids, could I bring them and donate them? And he took them to Crestview Elementary this past December. And the kids there made cards for him. There were a bunch of cards when he got there. And they gave them to me this week to look at. And so I wanted to read a couple of them to you because they're very, very sweet. This one says, thank you, Mr. Gary and Miss Linda. Thank you so much for the bike. It is my first no training wheel bike. They will be used. This one says, thank you, Mr. Gary and Mr. Linda. Got that right. You are the very best, and you gave us bikes, and now I have a bike now because of you, so thank you so much. There's some future riders in this group, I can tell you right now. Dear Mr. Gary and Miss Linda, thank you for the bike. My brother has never had a real bike. They have a bike with no pedals. And then this last one, which I really love, this is so neat. Thank you, Mr. Gary and Miss Linda, for the bike. I got the bike for my brother. He did not have a bike. Have a happy new year. Such a simple thing. Something Gary likes to do is work on those bikes and put them together. And he takes them and he donates them. And these aren't brand new bikes. They've got some chips in the paint, but they've got new parts. They've got new pieces. They work. And he takes him and he says, hey, I've got these bikes. Who could use a bike? And people notice that. Children notice that. A kid that doesn't have a bike notices when you give him a bike. It touches him somehow. It changes him somehow. He knows that there's light in this world, that it is not all darkness. When we shine our light into the world, people notice it. They're touched by it. They're curious about it. They follow it, maybe just a little bit, but every little bit counts. As our Christmas season comes to a close, and we rejoin our regularly scheduled programming, we come at last to these Magi, seeking something different in the world. Who will bring the light today? That is our question as we repack the Christmas decorations, put away the tree, put things back where they belong. It's easy to forget about Christmas once it is all boxed up. But the lessons of this season should go with us throughout the year. We come as angels, heralds of God's good news. We come as Mary and Joseph, responding to God's call in our hearts. We come as that innkeeper, making room for Jesus to come into the world. We come as the shepherds, the witnesses to God's grace, who go to tell it on the mountain. We come as the Magi, looking for light in the darkness. As Christmas comes to a close, may we continue coming to Christ throughout this year. May we continue being bearers of God's hope, God's joy, God's love, God's peace, that we might stand out as a people of light. May that light catch someone's eye, make them notice there is something different, and draw them a little closer to God.